Hot dogs, get your hot dogs here. Ice cold beer, cotton candy. Buy one, get one free. Do not pay until next year. Hey, you, come here. I've got something that you'll really like. Step right up and win a prize. We live in a world where we're constantly marketed to. We're told that in order to be smart, healthy, cool, or in the know, we need to buy this, that, or the next thing. The world tells us that buying the newest gizmo, the flashiest car, or the biggest of big screen TVs, and by doing that, we will become happy. And with that, we will become complete. And we believe it. But when we buy in and do what we're told, we find that we're still the same small, needy person we were before we purchased our new toy. We also participate in cycles that are less obvious but more dangerous in various ways every day. We continue to try to make ourselves feel better. We can believe that knowledge, hard work, and achievement will give us the self-worth and satisfaction that we seek. We can believe that our moral attitudes and actions will make us happy because they allow us to feel that we are better than other people. The devil has us chasing after many things in search of happiness, and he distracts us from the one thing that can make us whole and really satisfy our need for healing. We can also fall into the trap of becoming comfortable with where we are at in the rat race of things and resigned to the discomfort that we've become familiar with. God must not want us to be happy. The concepts of surrender and grace barely cross our minds. So we begin to see life as just getting by. We throw all our effort into surviving under our own power and don't even admit to ourselves that there could be something better than the broken, empty mess that we find ourselves in. And in this way, we aren't much different from the Israelites that the prophet Isaiah was speaking to, who had been in exile for about a generation. The Israel that the prophet is speaking to in our passage is an Israel in Babylon, far from the promised land. It is an Israel that has given up on the promises of God and God's ability to fulfill those promises. God had promised David an everlasting covenant, but the nation, including David's descendants, had been carried off into Babylon. The everlasting covenant seems to have been broken, and the God that promised it seems weak and unable to deliver. Why shouldn't Israel buy into the customs and practices of their captors? Why not spend energy to participate in the power structures? Why not eat meat sacrificed to idols? After a generation in exile, the people and some of the captured Israelites probably had it pretty good lives. And if God had abandoned them, why not try to make the best of it on their own? It's to these people the prophet asks the question, why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Don't buy into Babylon, the prophet is saying. Don't work so hard to get things that ultimately won't sustain you. Things may look bleak. It may seem that you need to make it on your own. It may seem that the promises God made to David can't possibly come true, but they will. God doesn't see things the way you do. He doesn't think the way you do. God sits higher than you, and the horizon that he can see beyond is beyond what you are capable of seeing. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. God can see the long game, while Israel can only see the slump that they are in. God can see them clinching the series. Israel's problem is not solely that they've been conquered, it's that they can't see a way out. They lack faith, so they lack imagination. They feel abandoned by God, so they feel that nothing is going to change, so they're going to accept the way it is and live without God's favor in a land far away from what they had been promised, and do it as best they can. Some of the captive Israelites may have also felt that what they were doing was fine, and that they were fine on their own and didn't need what God had to offer. They had their own water sources. They had found their own way to survive, and they were fine with that. There was no need to return to Jerusalem, no need to build a wall, no need to restore a temple for a God who had either given up on them or wasn't strong enough to keep his promises. To strengthen Israel's hope and broaden their imagination, God reminds them of the past he shared with them and points towards a shared future. Remember King David? I'm going to make a covenant with you like I did with him. You know what I did with him? I made him powerful. His strength testified to my plans and my love for you. He loved me and brought you as a nation closer to me. He was a strong king, and I made him ruler in spite of his weaknesses. The nations around Israel looked at him and saw my power and my love. Now, just like I did that for David, I'm going to do the same for you. I will bring you back to your land, and I will make you so wonderful and beautiful and interesting that nations that you have not even heard of will find out about you and need to see what I'm all about. Through the prophet, God tells an exiled people all these things. Like a water seller, in the old time, the ancient marketplace, he offers his life-giving wares. In Hebrew, the first word of this chapter could actually be translated as something like, "Hey, you." It's to get the listener's attention. The prophet is marketing the gospel. The words that being used begin as the language of the marketplace, but they shift into an invitation of someone throwing a lavish banquet. It begins in the context where people expect to pay for what they need and moves to a place where all the requirements for celebration are provided. God shows the exiles what can be, but he also reminds them that things need to change for them to see the promises fulfilled. They need to get in line with his way of thinking. Let the wicked man forsake his ways and the evil man his thoughts. The wicked, the evil, and the ordinary captive Israelite needed to change their mindsets and their actions. Stop their scheming for survival and their denials of the possibility of the promises being fulfilled, and learn to see things from God's perspective, from God's higher perspective, from the heights of heaven. God can see the bigger picture. In adjusting their attitudes and their perspectives, the Israelites would not only survive, they would thrive. This is why the food on offer goes beyond simple grain and water that quenches hunger and thirst. There is milk on offer to strengthen the body and wine to gladden the soul. By being willing to turn their thoughts and actions towards God's way of thinking, the Israelites in exile have a chance to participate in a system that will constantly sustain them and continue to increase their fruitfulness. The prophet continues in using the image of height in relation to God when he talks about how God's promises will fall upon his people like rain and snow. The prophet is using an image that any farmer or child who took grade school science would know. He's talking about the water cycle. Rain and snow fall as precipitation and are taken back up into the sky through evaporation from lakes and streams, and transpiration from plants, and the cycle repeats. These are images of growth and renewal that depend on God. What is more, when the plants grow, they will provide both food for the eater and seed for the sower. God is saying that these promises aren't just a one-time thing. They aren't a project that will get the Israelites back to Jerusalem and leave them there. It's a program that will continue to sustain and provide seeds for new crops of grace that will continue to multiply. God's grace isn't finite, it's infinite. It's meant to be continuous, and it's meant to grow as time goes on. Remember those curious nations that the prophet was talking about in verse 5? We are part of those nations. Through the nation of Israel, God became a human being that suffered and died so that his grace could be shared with the entire world. We continue to reap the benefits of the faith and the trust that Israel and eventually the early Christians placed in God. From that small seed, be it mustard or of wheat, we have all been fed. But as the thoughts and ways of Israel needed to change in order to be able to see the possibility of returning to their promised land, we also need to be constantly reminded that we cannot save ourselves, and that the only grace and peace we can truly experience must come from a God who deeply loves us and wants the best for us. It is only when our thoughts and actions begin to change that we will be able to see things from God's perspective. A problem we have is that when things get difficult, as they did for Israel when they were sent into exile, we can begin to think that God has given up on us. Think of a dog sled team where God is the driver and Jesus is the lead dog. As dogs on the team, we can choose to follow the instructions of the driver and the directions of the lead dog and reach our destination swiftly and smoothly. But this will only happen if we work with the team. If we choose to go our own way, we will be dragged and bumped and hurt ourselves and potentially others. It can be very easy to blame God for the pain we feel as a natural result of our own selfish actions and the selfish actions of others. But when we become stuck in the human way of thinking, when we think this way, we forget about God's love. His love in creating us as creatures with free will, and his love and forgiveness through Jesus that allows us to be reunited with him in spite of our bad actions and bad decisions. In order to live a grace-filled life, we need to remember whose thoughts and whose ways ultimately matter most. We need to stop thinking of what part God plays in our plans and move into looking for what part we can play in His plans. God has revealed His plans by sending His Son to be the perfect example for us, by giving us the Bible so that we can learn about who He is and has always been, and through leaving His Holy Spirit with us, to be with us always, prodding us into alignment with God's holy plan. Thankfully, we don't need to plan the route because we have a driver and a lead dog who know where we're going and how to get there. All we need to do is listen, to trust, and to obey. We need to do this. When we do this, the blessings promised to Israel are also promised to us. Aligning ourselves with God's will, or in other words, buying in to God's plan, will turn us into people that stand out in our societies because we aren't chasing after things, or power, or pride, or anything that the world thinks that we need in order to survive. If we truly buy into the living water of grace that God has freely offered us in Jesus, those who don't will find us strange and wonder what it is that makes us so unique. In this way, God will make us the new Israel that will draw people and nations that we wouldn't even dream of into the light of His kingdom. But the grace doesn't stop there. For Israel, the last two verses are an imagined, if slightly hyperbolic, image of their return to the promised land and what it will be like. It will be a moment of joy and of celebration that all creation will rejoice about and will be changed by. The mountains and hills will start singing, the trees will clap their hands, the vegetation that causes pain will be replaced with plants that represent strength and peace. All will be as it should be. When we buy into God's gracious plan for our lives, the grace will extend beyond our individual lives, beyond our narrow communities. It will extend beyond the limits of the human race. It will extend to all creation. All creation will be blessed by the grace that God pours out when we seek to see through His eyes and participate in His plan. The grace that accomplishes this is free. We need only align our thoughts and ways with God's and try not to earn that grace ourselves.